welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we are doing, because it's Monday, so we're doing our special presidential election episodes. And we are still going through what America deserves, but what America needs regarding constitutional positions and issues. What America needs in their president, if we are going to preserve our liberty, if we're going to preserve our freedom and put America back on track, where America could be, imagine this, folks, America could be great once and for all. As a matter of fact, let's change the name, because America has the connotation that it is here in the Americas, the North and South Americas. That was a name that was kind of labeled for this part of the world. And we already know that America, the United States, has stepped out of this side of the world because we have a state called Hawaii. And Hawaii is not a part of North America. And so when we really think of America, we really need to think of, or the United States, we need to think in a global perspective. Now, we haven't gotten into all of the foreign issues yet, but we will. We will. Patience, right? Believe you me, I am one person that is sorely lacking in that one virtue, patience. And so anybody that knows me, you know, knows I'm just always chomping at the bit, you know, ready to do something instead of patiently letting things take their course. So, and this is kind of why I'm not only, because what's that definition of insanity? Allowing things or doing things over and over again, expecting a different result? Well, why would we continue to allow the parties to control our system? Why would we continue to allow all of these things that we it is stating the obvious what all of those things that are happening are to our detriment, to our demise as a nation. You know, in so many ways, I really consider what we do on this show is a very spiritual show, because even though it is really not about, you know, living the commandments, it is getting our law and government to actually preserve those things that allow you and allow those who want to unite on very religious concepts, allowing that to actually, you know, exist. And when I say allowing to exist, we want to make sure that the liberty-loving religions of the world are protected, because they're actually competing for humanity to help us find a greater truth. And bottom line, those religions that are antithetical to liberty, why is it that they have not been eradicated? I mean, what do we have a need for this? Why would somebody need to have unless you're really weak, unless you really feel like, you know, there can be no other God before me. When it comes to gods, there is only one God and only one creator. But having a religion that allows for the open dialogue and discussion and providing the evidence. Remember, our God, our creator, has proven himself over time, not because we deserved it, but because there have been those before us that actually needed to prove to the chosen people, needed to prove that their creator is the creator of all. And so as we kind of move forward, we need to really start, you know, we need to get our arms wrapped around this paradigm of allowing antithetical religions to even exist. Satanism, Luciferism, communism, Mohammedism or Islam, any type of religion that believes in compulsion. I'm sorry. Now, a word to the wise. My mouth is going to be working a little bit slower than my head, so I'm going to be thinking things and saying something that didn't necessarily make sense, so forgive me. Now, when we look at these religions that use compulsion and compelling of those to do these things that are unsavory, things that, you know, are taking away the rights and even the life of others over a religious dogma, then those religious dogmas are harmful to society because they don't allow anything else to exist. They are subjugators. And it's time, folks, we just realize that slavery, you know, you're talking to somebody that actually believes in indentured servitude. I believe that indentured servitude will come back as a way forward because it has existed and it played a very important role. I'm not talking about slavery. I'm talking about case-by-case individuals who say, you know what? As a man, I just don't have what I need. I don't have the skills I need. I don't have, you know, the education I need. And so indentured servitude may be necessary for corporations. It may be necessary for manufacturing. It may be necessary for those types of things so that people can actually get exposed. I mean, this is how people came to America. America was built on indentured servitude. People would work 7 years or, you know, whatever, and maybe the 6 years and the seventh year be the jubilee or whatever. And I'm okay with creating those types of things or allowing those types of things to exist as long as people are willing to go into that. I mean, bottom line, everybody has to be their own. I'll just say you have to choose for yourself. If you choose that you need to go into indentured servitude, why is it that we would have a law to protect you from that? It's one thing to protect people from being enslaved. In other words, that they have no choice. That is subjugation. We don't want people to be subjugated to states. We don't want people to be subjugated to governments. As a matter of fact, here in America, you can actually free yourself from being a U.S. citizen. But when you do, we should be deporting you. I'm okay with that. I do understand that the framers created this kind of an elaborate and complicated citizenship inhabitant system in allowing those people. And there's probably merit in that. But when you have a former U.S. citizen who actually chooses to not be a citizen anymore, then I think that is a good justification to let those people go. But anyway, the whole reason I got down this rat hole is I really do look at this as more of a spiritual, because the philosophies are really that of, you know, what needs to be in concert with or harmonious with, you know, our Creator and His laws and what we need to be doing to protect your rights, your liberties, to be able to have access to the truth, to making the best decisions for yourself. So this is why, and I'm going to get into one really aside that is not on the presidential election regarding what people really need from their president, but I want to use this as an example because one of the things that I've been talking about, and if you've been following how to make a constitutional county and what it takes to do that, if you really drill into this, one of the things that needs to occur at the county level throughout the states, that all states and counties do this, that instead of having strictly a jury duty for crimes, you know, we can actually eradicate or let's just say reduce the amount of needs for juries over crimes if we actually as a society behave better. So how would we involve self-government for all of the selves out there? Well, the best way to do that is to get them engaged in overseeing and participating in a, I'll call it a jury process over very specific stuff. And it will, in other words, we'll have committees and we'll have a committee and a jury basically determining if our infrastructure services are meeting our needs, are pointing towards the strategic desires of the county and the state and so forth. See, you know, the only reason why states have languished, or some states have kind of languished, may not necessarily be just because there's no appeal, the people don't want to be there, or what have you. It's because there's no vision, because they don't have any plans. You don't necessarily have to have, you know, an abundance of resources, even though every state in this union does have an abundance of resources. It's just that they're being constrained from accessing those resources because the federal government has assumed powers that they have no authority to do. And so anyway, one of the juries that I'm talking about in a constitutional county and constitutional state is one that regulates the platforms, the news platforms. Remember, we have, and the United States Constitution really does need to be clarified regarding the freedom of the press, that the United States Constitution I'm just putting it out there, folks, that Congress and the states need to actually come forward, where Congress basically says, please provide us with the standard definition of the press. Because if you actually go to all of the states and the state constitutions, almost all of them define the press as the person. And if that's the case, then Congress can easily just say, okay, all of the states define it that way, we must define it that way as well, because they are the parties to the compact. Now, it should be an easy amendment provided by the states to actually go in and add to the First Amendment that the freedom of the press as defined by the states in this union to mean the freedom of writing and publishing whatever you want to do as a person. In other words, it clearly points to the individual telling the story, providing the news. And then at that point, the states, because the federal government is only being constrained from being involved in the press at all, and that the states would then be able to regulate all the platforms, Facebook, Twitter, you know, the Tribune, the Herald, the Times, whatever platform exists within the state, even if it's a radio show or a radio channel or a TV channel or what have you. And the juries in the counties and so forth would actually, the counties would focus on what news is available in the county. So if you live in a county that actually gets broadcasting, television broadcasting from a particular, like in Atlanta, where there's probably a lot of counties and they can all look at all of the news that they're being bombarded with, and they can determine whether the news platform is objective, allowing freedom of the press, and actually supporting the freedom of the people to express themselves. And if they're not, then they need to be hammered. They need to be actually taxed. They need to be fined. Let's not call it a fine. Let's just say it is a propaganda fee. Because if you're going to actually drive or beat a very specific agenda, a drum that calls for people to do a specific type of thing, and, you know, do not give the, you know, objective view of all things considered, you know, and the facts and so forth, and you're not being objective, and you want to be a propaganda mill, then you can pay for that. And this is how we get rid of all of these news agencies that are all being driven by a globalist agenda. Now, I've got a great example for you and how this has been done. Because if you read in the news recently, there's been a little article, and this kind of started with AP News and the rest of the mainstream news media, that RAGE financing, RAGE fundraising, RAGE, R-A-G-E, RAGE funding for abortion has really dropped off. And they're all saying that this is a travesty because these pro-abortion groups are not getting the money that they need to fight. Now, if you've been listening to other conservatives and so forth, they're talking about how this one issue has really been, you know, integral in the election process, that they're using this issue and they need the funding to use this one myopic issue to get people out because they believe that there's a majority of people that want abortion. Well, now there you have it. Now, if you go into this, if you just look at, and you can go into Bing News or what have you, probably find it, you know, today. It was definitely yesterday. But if you look, this article was actually being out there. And the reason for this article was to help everybody understand where they needed to contribute on the abortion issue, so that they could make it political. In other words, driving a political outcome. And so this is AP News, ABC News, Time, USA Today, MSNBC, and MS News, PBS, Yahoo, Washington Post, Boston Herald and Boston Globe, NARAL, NARAL, Chicago Tribune, CNET. A computer technology news. There's all sorts of different types of news. Spectrum local news. Folks, I can't tell you enough why we actually have to start controlling, because we have hostile forces that are literally waging warfare, propaganda warfare, information warfare against us. You know, you cannot tell me that in this education system, the kids are being introduced to news sources and what they would call enlightenment sources, where the child can then go and be, you know, be exposed to the dogma of, you know, what to do and how to act as an activist and how to get more involved and how to vote and so forth. Don't try. I mean, Fox News used to be the bad news. As a matter of fact, who invited Fox News, those types of little comments, you know, have been pretty standard. Now, if you haven't noticed, Fox News has swung hard to the left. Now, we're talking not just Fox. I'm talking about the national Fox channels that are subsidized, or I should say subsidiaries, through your local news networks. What I see today that is coming out is labeled as Fox News. It is not the Fox News that used to be objective and, you know, unbiased or what have you. It has really swung to the left. And I'm not surprised to find that pretty soon Fox News will probably be the champion of, you know, the media and the press, because as we looked at all of the other news, we saw Fox, even back when Bill O'Reilly was a guest host, we saw Fox was constantly leading, and they believe that people are still going to be continuing to use Fox. And I'm telling you, Fox is losing their viewership. They've gone woke. They're going to go broke. And we can see Newsmax and what is it, OANN or whatever, all of these alternate news sources. Folks, these are all platforms. And as a matter of fact, we deserve to have objective reporting. We deserve to have the actual platform provide us with the full details instead of ramming their dogma down our throat. Now, I'm telling you, they know what they're doing, and they've been doing this for a long time. This is how propaganda works. You know, all you have to do is keep on repeating the lie, and eventually people believe the lie. So don't tell me that we, you know, don't have these problems, but we do. And so let me just end there and let's get ready to dive in. So one of the things, because in the presidential issues, these special episodes we're doing, We've been talking about leading in fixing the state constitutions and encouraging the counties to call for a constitutional convention and so forth. And so one of the things I was getting into is prior to holding these conventions, the county commissioners really need to hold a series of virtual meetings with each other. This is before the state convention, because they need to actually work through what the county powers need to be. And they also need to pound out, you know, maybe some parameters and some standards, because bottom line, if your county cannot support a three branches of government, then the question is, should that county be basically pulled into another county to where you can actually have all three branches? Because our government, as it is Republican in form, should be formed to ensure that we have the separations of power at all government levels. In other words, you have a separate judiciary, you have a separate legislative, and you have a separate executive. And when we look at executive powers, it's not just enforcing the law anymore. We've actually grown a lot in let's just say, how we look at what government should be doing. Because if you've got services, public services, then government should be doing that. We should not be allowing, and I'm only talking about not food. I'm not talking about, you know, competitive services. I'm saying that if there cannot be any competition, then what we need to actually look at and what we need to try to, you know, go down this path of saying, okay, you know, like wireless phones. Wireless phones are not necessarily your cell towers. The cell towers is your infrastructure. Any company can actually start, you know, going into and becoming competitive. I'm telling you what, there's not enough competition. And because all of these cell towers that were, you know, invested by one company, but, you know, in 9 times out of 10, they're subsidized by the government. Yo, well, we want a tower here. We want a tower there. And they provide, you know, these incentives for all of these towers. Bottom line, we need to look at the infrastructure as the public services, and we need to actually say, okay, what can be competitive and what can't be truly competitive? You cannot have competitive electricity. You cannot have competitive water, sewage, those types of things. I mean, when it comes down to public services, we need to have the government actually take these things on so that our strategic interests and our innovation and those types of things are actually managed and controlled. What makes you think that a corporation, because a corporation's focus is profits, what makes you think that they're actually going to do the due diligence? Because look, we've had public utilities, not government, managing our electrical grid. And look at our electrical grid today. It's the same thing as look at the water. Look at the water services. You know, who do we blame? We actually need to start blaming, you know, the fact that our government has allowed bad players to actually take over these things so that they could profit the money, or, you know, make money off of these things and use that money in political positioning so that they can create more and more controls and make more and more money off of you. And that, my friends, is the link, because it's always about money and how money will corrupt the problem. Now, if it's not about profit, and it's all about the strategic interest and the strategic need, you know, there we would actually probably have reasonable internet throughout the United States if government was actually serious about the strategic interest of having those services. Why? Because when every person in the state has the opportunity to optimize their productivity, then you now have, you know, all of your cylinders firing at full optimum capability, or at least you're providing that ability to occur. And so we'll be right back after this one promo.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's remember the two objects of government. The two objects of government are protecting property and protecting life. Maybe not in that order, protecting life, then property. But when we really boil down government and what government really should be doing, it shouldn't be getting involved in all of the knickers, only those things that it would provide best. Now, our military government, when I look at, you know, the militia and the federal, when we federalize the, you know, the military, because that's the national security interest that the United States carries. I mean, we've become the best in the world. And that's been in spite of, you know, not following the Constitution. We just think how much better we would be if we'd been following the Constitution. Now, when we look at government getting involved in those things, local and state government getting involved in those things that cannot be competitive, you know, like roads and so forth, why is it that government always takes the, you know, these positions of control? You know, like, okay, so we have a problem because the roads, you know, you can only drive so fast safely. And so what they do is they control your speed and they control your ability to be productive without a goal or a strategy to consider and working with innovations for corporations to bring in personal POVs, privately owned vehicles, to allow you to travel safely in a much faster capacity to getting to work. Why should the government be incentivized in allowing society to become optimally productive? Because when society is producing more, that means that it's making more, and it allows the government to be able to, you know, obtain the money that it can continue to invest in its infrastructure and those things that government needs to do. It doesn't mean that we want to give government the power and the ability to do, you know, social things. As a matter of fact, when it comes down to philanthropic issues, then, you know, like welfare, healthcare, education, government shouldn't even be involved in that. Now, there may be some strategic interest, you know, ensuring that, you know, the children are actually being educated. Here's a twist for you. When we look at education, who is the one recipient of the byproduct of our education system? The byproduct, my friends, are the employers, the businesses out there. Do you think businesses are happy getting woke children? Why do you think, you know, global and tech businesses and so forth, they're saying, we need more, you know, what is it, B1 visas or whatever they're called, to allow, you know, foreigners to come in to do the work, because our current education system is not meeting the needs. Because we're not teaching children all of those technical things. You know, I saw a pretty interesting analogy where, you know, somebody was talking about if you ever sit down and talk to a child at, you know, first grade child or a class of children in the first grade, they'll start asking some of the deepest questions of like, how does this happen? How does that work? You know, but what are we feeding them? They want to know all of the details. And I'm telling you, today, the human mind and our ability, if we improved our education system, our children would be able to get... Let's look at it as, you know, an old world 200 years ago. How much and how many people understood the combustion engine? How many people understood computers? How many people understood energy and the different forms of energy? You know, they were very limited, but these men really did understand politics, and their mind was capable of understanding even a lot more. But because they didn't have a lot of competitive things in, you know, in, I'll just say, taking up their valuable time of learning and expanding their knowledge, they were able to really dive deep into and creating a government system. Our frame has created a government system that is unparalleled, unparalleled. So why is it when we look at today, you know, where we spend so much time and we allow our government to weaponize our children to become these munitions of social engineering and social justice? This is absolutely destructive. It is one thing to actually make America the leading provider of education in the world for children, you know, what, regardless of what age that is. That's where we need to be competing. And I am telling you that these brick and mortar institutions can't do it. That the better institutions are family institutions. The framers were built on and educated via the family. And then there was higher education. In other words, K to 12 really wasn't, you know, a public thing. It didn't become a public thing until Horace Mann came back. Because for the most part, everything was homeschooled. And so when we really look at our education, why is it that we look at our education in what we want our children to understand so that we can control them instead of teaching them, you know, the principles of science, the principles of innovation, the principles of economics, fundamental principles that would actually, you know, further us as a nation and be far more productive? Why is it that we're actually being fed, you know, we're feeding our children probably worse than we're feeding our dogs when it comes to education? And so because we don't teach our dogs to do things that are destructive to you know, the dog in our society, if that makes sense. But we are actually teaching our children to be destructive towards our liberties and destructive in our productivity and everything else. They have no clue the damage that they're doing. And so anybody objectively looking at this can say, America, you are close to the brink of collapse. And who's doing this? Who has the vested interest in actually destroying America? It's not America, but somehow there's an outside influence that has basically corrupted our politicians and our government in allowing, or I should say, in taking our government down this path of waging warfare against the states and the people. I proved that at the beginning of the year. I gave you that. Go look at my January 23rd, 2023 Constitutional Minute. It's right there on my Constitutional Articles page. Go look at it and read how I've quantified exactly how they are waging all different forms of warfare against us. And education is one of those. So getting back to, you know, helping the states understand, they need to actually have these juries in all of these different, I'll just say, unique or segregated market spaces. Education would be one. Energy would be another. The news platforms would be another. Technology, I don't know. But, you know, maybe labor. bottom line, you know, if it's something that can be competitive, then we want to make sure government is not involved, or we want to reduce government's involvement to the most that we possibly can. I cannot emphasize this enough. Government only creates problems and obstacles when, you know, it is something that is can be managed in a competitive market. And allowing a free competitive market to flourish in America is in America's best interest. But it's not in corporations' best interest. You know, corporations that want these, you know, long-term copyrights. You know, the Constitution, when it says that, you know, it will have these standards of copyrights for a short period of time. When we create copyrights that lock down technologies, for indefinite amounts of time, are you kidding? Then we're allowing the corporations to enslave us. And that's what's happened because, you know, the corporations as lobbyists will actually pay off. It's in so many different ways, lobbyists and have a corporation having access to our public systems. This is why all elections, local and our Republican form of government, needs to be understood by the people, by our children, so that they understand how we've been completely perverted, because a lobbyist should not have access to your representatives. That whoever that lobbyist is, they've only got one representative that they voted for in America in a state level. You know, they may have two for their legislative district, but that's it. They shouldn't be able to go around and talk to all of these others because they're being funded by a corporation. Our government is literally selling themselves, prostituting themselves out to anybody who's willing to pay. And if we actually enforce the Republican form of government, then there's no way any company could walk in and just talk to your senator, to your representative at the state level. There's just no way. They don't have the right to influence or to come in and peddle anything, because they don't have that right of representation. Only you do. And actually, our representatives are, who's their number one constituent? It's not really you. It's not us, the voters. Their number one constituent is the Constitution. And when we start understanding these things, then, oh man, we're really going to take off as a nation. So prior to holding these conventions, county commissioners really need to have these serious conversations, and they need to look at how, you know, they want to start quantifying what, you know, a true full-fledged county is. Do you want to allow counties that cannot function with all three heads of government? Because as far as I'm concerned, you really don't have a government if you don't have the separations of power. If you've only got a legislative and a judiciary, and a sheriff is supposedly your executive, then you really, your best interests aren't there. So what should probably happen is maybe there should be mergers of some of these counties, so that there's only, but see, here's why the courts don't want this to happen, because they'll lose judge seats. The lawyers won't have as much money coming in because they really make money when they're judges. And nobody wants to give up seats. Nobody wants to give up real estate that they've had access to. They want to expand it. They want to create more. It's just like, you know, every military out there is trying to carry more command so that they have more opportunities for officers to have command level experience. Folks, that is self-serving. That is not why we have government. Government is, so we actually need to have these conversations with our representative, not with the judges, not with the executives, the representatives, your county commissioners, county supervisors, need to actually start having these conversations and creating committees with the people of the county and say, okay, look, you know, what? How should we do this? How should we, because we technically should have. Our government is formed on all separations of powers, that we need to have all three. We need to have an executive. And, oh, by the way, we really need to look at ensuring that it's a Republican form of government and not a democracy. So, in other words, you won't be voting for your, you know, your county governor. You'll be voting for, you know, a elector for your county and state issues. In other words, just like the Electoral College, the county will have its own Electoral College that will take care of statewide and countywide seats. You'll vote for your representatives and you'll vote for your elector, and your elector will actually fill the governor's seat, the lieutenant governor's seat, the attorney general's seat, so forth and so on, so that those seats will... Or if you choose to allow your governor to actually seat, you know, and appoint your attorney generals, I don't like that. I believe that everybody should not be beholden to a position, you know, and awarding, because this is where, hey, if you help me get elected, I'll make you my attorney general. This alleviates that. We do not want to see, you know, these abilities to create a spoil system. That your electors really need to be the ones to choose who is going to be, you know, the head of the Department of War. I believe the Department of Defense. I believe that we really need to actually go back into the federal and state, you know, processes of choosing and ensure that the electors have, because they're the representatives of the people. And they really do need to understand, because actually, if you think about it, most of the executive branches, because they're all unconstitutional, would be wiped out. Well, the ones that would stay would be the Department of Defense, the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of the Treasury. So those three secretaries or those three executives would actually be then appointed by the electors. Just like the electors, who chooses the vice president? The electors. And they're the ones to choose. The president should not be able to create a spoil system. The governor should not be able to do that. And as a matter of fact, this was proven by Andrew Jackson himself. He's a guy that actually rallied a whole bunch of people and then paid them off with his presidency in making sure that they all had a seat at the trough of the, you know, the taxpayers. In other words, all of these political positions where they all got paid for the 8 years he was in office. And he put it on steroids, where they actually started changing out, you know, roles and firing people and bringing more people in. Anyway. So this is just the basics on leading the states and helping the states understand what they need to do. Some important issues that they'll actually need to determine and establish, again, are the three branches, the Electoral College, and making sure that they have the appropriate resources to support that type of government. They need to actually kind of articulate what that kind of government would cost. Now, you got to remember that a lot of the government stuff is actually just going to go away, because everything that the federal government is doing, environment and all those other things, unless you, you know, in your state constitution, you add those things. But bottom line, you want to make sure that there will be no amendments, that the county suppress any and all amendments to the state constitution until you form your constitutional convention. And so fundamentally, they also have to address apportionment and keep apportionment as low as possible, and so that we can actually make sure that we get proper representation. You know, if the framers knew that the more people you actually could have one person represent, the less representation they actually had, then you really need to look at what those standards are and what your basic minimum of representation for a state legislator should maybe be 30,000. In other words, it shouldn't be more than 30,000, or a senator, in representing the county, that county should probably have a minimum of a 30,000. So once you've done that, once you've created the minimum apportionment, will allow you to actually say, okay, so that minimum apportionment is the minimum of what we would need to actually have a good, effective, with separations of power, government at the county level. And in so doing, you now actually have the ability to, one, fund and form a good, strong county government that is truly representative of the people and representative of the Constitution. So these virtual meetings that the commissioners will have amongst each other will allow them to coordinate and actually start working out the constitutional framework that they need to, that they'll need to create, as well as, you know, those state things that they need to create for the state constitution. In other words, you know, what powers do they want to have reserved to the counties, and then what level of oversight do they really want, or not even oversight, what responsibilities they need to give to the state to make sure it provides a uniform support for infrastructure, uniform support. In other words, uniform based on apportionment, not based on let's just say, democracy. So that, you know, counties that are more populated, obviously they're going to, you know, get their fair share. Everybody gets their fair share. So that nobody gets, you know, extra roadway support and so forth. And as a matter of fact, you'll realize that the population centers, if they can only, you know, if they have only the transportation system that suits their needs internally and not externally, then they will implode because they won't be able to have the network of roadways going through the different counties to ensure that the products and or the goods can get to them and that their goods can get out to the others and to the other states. So when it comes to infrastructure, infrastructure is going to be huge. It'll be very, very important. And the better we allow our infrastructure to flow, this is, goes all the way back to Adam Smith. When we look at, you know, what will help us grow economically, the more efficient we can actually move our commerce, move our labor. In other words, getting you to work and getting you home safely and getting our commerce, the fastest way to, you know, getting it from here to there and the most effective cost. Maybe it's rail. Maybe we need to expand the rail system. Maybe a state wants to go down that path. But, you know, if one state goes down that path and the other states don't, then it's futile. Now, we do know that there's the greatest competition is with trucks, but the most expensive road system or transportation system is with roads. So rails are probably a much cheaper form of transportation, but more competition gets opened up at the expense of the people. So these are the types of discussions that I think the states and the counties need to really start having as they want to map out their future in moving, because we realize that when you have a rail system, you should be able to move commerce, you know, very fast and very efficient and very effectively, because it you know, it doesn't go through the stops. It's unstoppable. Right? I mean, you have bridges. It's designed to be a nonstop access, almost like a freeway, very limited access on and off. And so it's the same thing, getting people moving around and, you know, separating commerce. I'm not even telling you this is the best way to go. I'm just thinking out of the bottle here or out of the box. If you really start thinking about how you can get people to move better, look at the road systems in these major cities that are just absolutely clogged during two times of the day, when rush hour, morning and evening. What vehicles are out there that if you remove those vehicles, you know, and can we actually have different routes where, you know, the commerce, your commerce trucks, your local businesses aren't necessarily competing, or let's start looking at actually different type of craft, not just automobiles, but different types of craft to allow people to move themselves more efficiently. Folks, if you look at what's going on today, roundabouts are becoming the norm. And go look up, Google this, Traffic Calming Department of Transportation. They're deliberately slowing you down and taking away productivity, all in the name of safety. And I'm here to tell you that, you know, we could be doing a lot better than what they're giving you in demanding that you slow down. Because that, you know, that roundabout is a 24/7 obstruction, regardless of what time you want to move your goods at night. And it's one of the things companies need to look at. Maybe we actually move, you know, our productivity instead of shipping from 9 to 5. You know, we actually ship from, you know, 10 at night to 4 in the morning. That's when, you know, groceries and those types of things. I'm just saying that when we look at being competitive and when we look at sharing our infrastructure and so forth, you know, we all have to come to the table and be willing to give up the people themselves, not government. All of the people need to be able to come to the table and say, look, we've got to be able to give up some things here so that we can all benefit from a very organized society. The more organized, the more managed we become, and the more disciplined we become, we will actually, again, back to Adam Smith, if we actually, you know, maximize our throughput of commerce, we can be unstoppable. There's no nation in the world that has the type of throughput that we could possibly have. And so Adam Smith was very, very clear. And so the framers were very aware of that, which is why the Wealth of Nations was literally the Bible that they used to creating a free market system. And this is how we became so great, is because of our free market principles. So in other words, if nobody's going to budge and everybody wants to operate, you know, in their functioning and everything else all at the same time with the same resources, then we're going to have bottlenecks. And we can't necessarily continually expand more and more lanes for our freeways. We've got to start thinking and breaking the models of what we have and what is the best way to go, so that we can actually allow ourselves, so government will actually allow you, the people, to have better control over your strategies and keeping these leftists from destroying our productivity and destroying our nation. So as we move on, so the next thing we're going to get into, actually, I still need to wrap up. County commissioners need to keep in mind the model of law enforcement regarding everyone's responsibility. So we need to keep that as well, not just the commerce stuff. Thus, rewriting the constitutions to be in the similitude of the U.S. Constitution regarding the militia and the county executives and the sheriffs and so forth, and maintaining these separations of power, and also maintaining cognizance that the executive will always be a civilian. We have to have a cooling off time to make sure anybody that has been serving in the military actually has a good cooling off, that we shouldn't allow a military head to step right into a civil leadership position. Now, we're going to get into the finances and the economic matters next Monday. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort.
We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.